Hello everyone, welcome to Field Notes, an exploration of functional medicine. I'm Rob Downey, a family practice MD and Institute for Functional Medicine certified practitioner. I'm coming to you from Seaworthy Functional Medicine in Homer, Alaska. Seaworthy exists to help people overcome their health challenges and be fully vital.
Welcome everyone. We are fortunate enough today to have with us Margie Bissinger. She is a physical therapist and integrative health coach. And for many years, she has helped women with their bone density, and she does it with functional medicine and integrative principles, including happiness as a vitality tool, and food and exercise. So welcome, Margie. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So what should I add to your bio, given that I only did the thumbnail sketch? What more should our listeners know today that I didn't?
Let's see. I've been working with osteoporosis and osteopenia for over 25 years, actually. So I, as a physical therapist and also as a health coach. And I think, so that's one thing. And I've also been teaching happiness to my patients for over 35 years. So I think those are really important. There's a lot of other things that I've done. And I teach online classes and I see people one-on-one. So lots of things. But I think that I've had experience in both of these areas for quite a while. And the good news is that it's all good. There's so much that can be done. And I think that's really empowering for people to hear.
Yes, yes. We chatted a little before we started recording today how much good news there is in the kinds of work that we do. And how, it's a great time for good news.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So when I realized in reviewing your credentials and work that there's two big things happening, there's bone density support and there's this huge domain of happiness, I set for us this perhaps ambitious agenda that we'll try to summarize the two somewhat for our listeners. And I do want to thank our listeners for joining us and learning. And one thing I thought I might do with your permission is, would it be okay if we just briefly did a non-denominational pause for those who are suffering and just acknowledge that there's a lot of people who are suffering and afraid, and we just take a little, just one brief moment? Since
Oh, yes, that's wonderful. Yes.
Okay, thanks. And so we'll just pause for 1 second. Again, we'll just have a non-denominational moment of positive intent for those who fear, those who suffer, those who've lost, and our intent and prayer for them is that that they have safety and wholeness and healing and peace. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you letting me do that.
Oh, I appreciate that. I love group intentions, especially that magnitude. So
I think then let's segue in by first sharing with women in particular, though of course there are men with bone density issues as well, but often an issue for women and often happens after menopause. So a lot of the women that I see as an MD that are fatalistic, that medications are going to be required, and they're often a bit disenchanted with the ideas that the medications may have side effects or may not work terribly well. So you and I both witness women have these wonderful successes as they connect the dots that their food, their lifestyle, their exercise, et cetera, helps the bones grow the business. So should we start there and have you share your expertise for women to know that it's possible?
Yes, absolutely. First, before I even start there, let's go way back, because people think, oh, I don't have to worry about my bones until after menopause. And that is so far from the truth, because it's sort of like a bank. We develop 85 to 90% of our adult skeleton in women by the age of 18 and 20 in men. So what we do when we're younger, and peak bone is around age 25 to 30. So all of those years before, it's like putting money in the bank. We're putting deposits. And what we have then is going to have a huge effect on our bones later on. So it's really something I think every doctor to, just like we do things for their heart to make sure people are doing, you know, living a heart healthy lifestyle and other things. We make sure cholesterol's okay, but no one really looks at, are you doing things to put stress on your bones so that your bones are healthy later in life? So I think it's something for women of all ages, because nobody wants to get older and have a hip fracture. And, you know, 24% of those people will die in a year of the hip fracture. Nobody wants to be like that. We all want to age and live a great life and be active and be able to hike and do and travel. So I think what we do when we're young matters, and it's easy. So I think that all the things I'm going to say apply to all ages. That being said, there's really, oh, did you want to say something?
Well, I love that not only then will those women have money in the bone bank, but they'll be living the bone supportive lifestyle as they transition rather than sort of playing catch up.
Yes. And I really look at osteoporosis. You know, a lot of people are, oh my gosh, they get the diet, they feel fine. And then they get that DEXA and they get this diagnosis, you have osteoporosis, because they compare their bones to a young person, you know, bone density on the DEXA. And they tell, say, what standard deviation away. And all of a sudden now, their whole life, they think is shot. That, you know, all of their dreams are gone because now they have osteoporosis. But I look at it as an opportunity. You feel fine. And it's an opportunity to reassess, because the bones are not in isolation. And so often when something's going on with your bone, there's other things going on. And you, being a functional medicine doctor, know this more than anyone. But so often people I see, they have digestive issues, they have inflammation, or they're couch potatoes, or they're eating a diet full of sugar and junk food. And so when we change, when we do the things that are healthy for their bones, unbelievable things happen, and we reduce stress too, that's a big part. Unbelievable things happen. Their life becomes so much better. So it was really a blessing in disguise. So that's what I see. And the good news is that there's so much. And I've been, as I said, I've been working with people for over 25 years with this, that people can minimum maintain, but I've seen people increase their bone density by figuring out the root cause, the right exercise, nutrition, and reducing stress and increasing happiness. That's sort of what I found, the formula that works.
And I've seen that in my practice, that when the challenge then becomes an opportunity, admittedly, there's some grieving and anxiety during that transition. But as the woman lights up to the idea that, oh my gosh, not only is my bone density going to get back to where I want it, but then this vitality spills over into those domains of bright morning energy and being at ease within my body and, you know, the light in my eyes, that's what they're reporting, then they still wouldn't have chosen to have their density drop, but there's a sense of joy and engagement and ease as they get around the corner. And I'm sure you see that all the time.
I do. I really do. I mean, I think life's like that, that there are silver linings and that you have to sort of realize that while you're going through. But yes, that's what I see. I see that there's so much better. I mean, so many couch potatoes are now active, exercising. It's amazing. And you know how critical food is. So by doing a bone healthy diet, we're also doing a diet that can affect every part of your health. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's all a win-win. That's how I look at it. And usually when you find out, unless you've had a fracture and you're debilitated, you know, a younger person who finds out, and that's typically how people find out from a DEXA scan. But if you find out, then you're feeling fine. So it's just time to be proactive, make changes that will spill over into every other area of your life.
I love getting to meet my tribe via these podcasts, because the threads are very similar and each thought leader has a variation then of how they manifest these universal principles that co-emerge over and over again. And I was trying to think of how to be the best steward of your time today, how to get the most for our listeners. And I think that we may want to, you know, go into supplements or a little, but I think that there's good experts like you that people can track down. You know, they're their calcium dose or what have you. One thing that really struck me big time reviewing bone density recently was the gut and the gut microbiome. And then that ties in with happiness and stress. Maybe we should delve into that a little. Do you want to?
Absolutely. The interesting thing is that what I find upsetting is that someone will find out they have osteoporosis and then they immediately get put on medication, not even assessing, is there a problem with their gut? And so often, I would say at least 50% of the people I work with have digestive issues. And I think what I see is that most people don't think they're an issue. Oh yeah, I go every 3 days, or I'm constipated, or oh yeah, I have some heartburn, but no problem, I take Prilosec, or you know, I take the antacids, which aren't good for your bones. But I think a lot of people have these underlying issues. They don't even realize that it can be improved. And then they just go on, you know, they'll go on the medication or something. So you're missing one of the reasons. If you have a digestive issue, you're not going to be absorbing your nutrients. It's like a hose. You know, you're trying to turn the water on, you're eating the food, and you may be eating a really great diet. But if you're stepping on the hose, you're not getting the water. And same thing, if there's a kink in the digestion or a problem, you're not going to absorb the nutrients. And then when you're not getting the nutrients, you're not going to have strong bones, and you're going to have loss of bone density, and it continues. So I think that's really important. And then, yes, they found actually that there's probiotics actually can increase bone density. So just even taking a probiotic can improve the bone density. So yes, there's a huge correlation, and that's one of the things I address with everybody. And most people don't realize that, oh, that could be, you know, I think people know about, because it's very, you know, they know that when they're on the antacids, it's been shown that increases osteoporosis, and that's a risk factor. Mm-hmm. And so, and the reason is they're reducing stomach acid, and we need stomach acid to break down our food and absorb our nutrients. But so I think a lot of people know about that, but I don't think they realize that just having some digestive issues can be a root cause of osteoporosis, and it must be addressed.
I think it's so important. I'll add to what you've shared and underscore that the similar theme is that women can't feel the bone density dropping off until maybe they feel it in a horrible way, a fracture. And the folks that I take care of who have suboptimal digestive capacity or imbalanced gut function, again, they don't feel it. So it needs to be illuminated as this dimension of their health that's mission critical. And some of the aha moments, so many of the folks I take care of do have a little fatigue or a little brain fog. And when we talk about the gut-brain connection, then they sometimes have more engagement around their gut. And I think one of the links to happiness, one of the most mind-blowing studies I saw in the last year or two, and we'll hunt it down for the citations, was that a lot of people know that better gut flora through probiotics, lacto-fermented foods, lots of fruits and vegetables, avoiding junk food. They know if the gut beneficial gut microbiome is happy, the brain is happy. But one of the studies showed that a positive attitude actually makes the gut a more favorable environment for the good organisms. What a wild arrow that is coming, the happiness arrow coming down from the brain and psyche to the gut and making it a better garden. I just thought that was awesome.
Well, I love how you put that. That was beautiful, a better garden. That was great.
So gut is really important. And I had thought maybe we'd wait till the halfway mark to talk about happiness, but I think probably our listeners need to know some of your expertise with happiness as well. And maybe they need some concrete examples of how what happiness is and how happiness ties to bone density. And if our agenda today ends up being over ambitious, that's on me. But thankfully they can go to your books and resources and podcasts. So if we end up trying to over distill the concepts, they have ways they can pursue them further.
Yeah, okay, that sounds great. Just one quick thing with the osteoporosis. So major exercise, good nutrition, that's the key. So the exercise is really important because people think, oh, a lot of times the doctors will just say, oh, you can just walk. It's not enough. You know, you need serious resistance exercise. And so people can work with a physical therapist. That's the absolute best because they'll look at your posture. They can really assess your program. And a lot, usually that's covered by insurance as well. So that's my absolute, you know, just, but it's important to be doing the right exercise. And don't think that, you know, most people think they're doing the right thing and can actually be doing things that are dangerous. So exercise and nutrition. That's, I just want to say how important that is.
Good. Very good. And let's do this then. Let's have the happiness tie-in be that there's all these non-drug things that women can do and should do if they're interested. And then of course they might approach me or their primary care provider or endocrinologist or what have you for a bone density support drug. That's a decision they make. It's, from my perspective, it's a modular decision. They choose the medication or not. I don't object either way. I just want them to know it's not the be all and end all. And often these protocols are 5 or 10 years max, not all of them, but let's just have the sort of keep sharing then the picture, the things you have expertise in, try for a happiness tie-in. And for example, with the exercise, your book illuminates that. If a woman wanted to read a book about the exercises that help their bones, they could. And also they can work with you as a coach. Do you do the coaching across state lines for women that
I do work one-on-one with people. I also have a lot of the material was amenable to a class. So I have a class called Happy Bones, Happy Life, where we go into the exercise, the nutrition, we go into stress and happiness because I believe, and I'll go into why I think that's so important. And so, yeah, because I think it's all of those areas that put together. So yes, so if people need one-on-one, I work with them or they can do one-on-one in addition to the class, lots of options. And then I have a speaker. It's funny because that class I've done for a long time. And then so many people just wanted the happiness part. So I also have a class called Happy Me, Happy Life that is just on happiness and so powerful. It's probably the most powerful thing I've ever taught. I can't even get over how lives have changed when people incorporate the happiness. So yeah, I'm happy to tie it in with the bones. In terms of like how, because a lot of people, like, what do you mean happiness and bones? Well, first of all, stress reduces the bone building cells, the cortisol. When people are stressed, they have increase in cortisol, and cortisol reduces the osteoblasts or the bone building cells. And they've done studies showing that increased anxiety, increased stress reduces bone density. And they found even psychosocial stress can reduce bone density. So there've actually been good studies as well as animal models showing that this increase in cortisol reduces bone density. So often people will come to me and they are, oh, I'm so worried. Oh my gosh, what exercises am I doing? What am I eating? Not realizing that the stress itself plays a critical role. And so when I find that with every condition, I just think, and it's funny because I'm not an unhappy person. I've always been actually a happy person, but I was very, very, very busy, like running, seeing patients, shoving my food in way back. And I decided to take a mindfulness meditation program, an 8-week program. And I got a speeding ticket on the way to meditation. And that, can you imagine? And that did it to me. That hit me in the head. And I took this class, like my life, realizing that I am not being authentic. I am not being relaxed, even though I'm happy. And so I totally changed my life. And I mean, this was around 11 years ago, I guess, totally changed my life. And it's been amazing. And I think when I practice the things, it makes it easy to help people because it's something that I do. And I've seen such a difference. Oh my goodness. But anyway,
we both see people, I think, who are sort of drenched in cortisol, but they don't know it. And then as they have those aha moments, again, they're able to connect to the dots and say, oh, if I lower this cortisol overproduction I wasn't aware of, then this stress hormone that kind of shuts everything off, that's its job, is just to help us sort of deal with the acute situation. When they shut off that overproduction, then there's not that hidden dampening signal, so the bones can go back to growing the business, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And then the happiness piece is that they've done studies as well with bones, and they've shown that people who are happier and have greater life satisfaction have increased bone density, that there's a correlation. And so it all goes together. I mean, the happiness has major health consequences, especially now. You're 35, people who are happy are 35% less likely to get sick. So your immune system's enhanced. How important now is that for all of us? They're 47% less likely to have sleep disorders, and sleep is critical for everything.
Right.
And yeah, it's really unbelievable. And if their cortisol, since we're talking about that, is 32% reduced in people that are happy. And they live 9 years on an average longer. So there's so many health benefits. You know, I think a lot of times people are like, oh, that's so frivolous. I can't really worry about my own happiness or having joy in my life. Who cares about that, right? But yet, you know, it's going to help. Besides, why should we not? We live one life. Why should we not make it filled with joy regardless of the circumstances? And I guess I should talk about that. My definition of happy is not Pollyanna, that you're walking around with a big grin on, because life's not like that. Of course, we're going to feel sad. We're going to feel disappointed. We're going to be angry about something. That's just human nature. But it's an inner sense of peace and well-being, regardless of your circumstance. And that's the definition of happiness that I live by and teach. And you can increase your base level of happiness. It's called your happiness set point. So that's really the good news.
I think it's going to help a lot of our listeners that they can challenge themselves if they haven't been as happy as they want to be. Then one of the challenges is, why not? And this must come up in your class all the time. You flagged it, but it may be worth exploring a couple of the dimensions of that. I'll speak for myself. I felt I had some sort of stoicism that maybe I was insensitive or unattuned to others, or that the world was such a tough place for so many people. If I was happy, again, that it would be Pollyanna-ish. It wasn't until I realized that it made me more emotionally in tune, have more capacity for compassion, more capacity to connect to the difficult and do something about it, to have an internal sense of peace and abundance. So I didn't see it as a this or that. I saw it as happiness and connect. That was kind of my...
Yeah. I love that. I really love that, because I feel the same way. Because right now we want to show up, and I want to be an active participant and really help with solutions. There's a lot going on right now. And if you're coming from a place of despair, you're not going to show up. You're not going to have the best energy. You're not going to be your best self. So you can show up and take action and do what needs to be done. So I think, I mean, it's interesting, because I got into happiness and realized way, way, way back in my 20s, I had gone through a bad situation where I got married, found out the person I married had been seeing someone the entire engagement. We lived in different cities and we didn't have cell phones back then. Anyway, it didn't work out. So I moved to Chicago working as a physical therapist, and it wasn't an easy, I was in my early 20s. And all my patients, I was working with chronic pain at the time, back, neck, TMJ, and they are miserable. They're so unhappy. Everyone, one was worse than the next. And they would go, Margie, you're so happy. What do you do? And I realized right at that moment that it's not based on your external circumstances. It's internal. And then I started teaching my patients. I started saying, you know what? A couple things really work for me. I'm going to start teaching them, because they were so unhappy, and see what happens. And it was shocking. Neck pain, back pain, TMJ got better much faster than it had with just the work I had been doing prior to introducing the happiness habits. And I also saw then people started smiling, they started having purpose, and actually they just were enjoying their life. There was like, they were very different. And that was like 35 years ago. So I've been teaching every person I work with now. That's just part of the program, because I see how powerful. And it's not selfish to want to have joy. And you can be better for those around you. as well as the world at large. You show up as a different person when you've figured out how to have joy. And again, it's not based on circumstances. It's just an internal sense of well-being.
Mm-hmm. So many of the thought leaders that I get to talk with now, this issue comes up of internal locus of control. That if we think the dog barking or the unexpected bill or whatever determines our happiness, the downside is we're externalizing our locus of control and saying that the bill or the dog's in charge. And I have found that it is sobering for people, the accountability factor, that when they take the locus of control for their happiness within, that there's responsibility then.
You know, that's such a good point, because people think there's an illusion that I will be happy when. I'll be happy when I get a different job. I'll be happy when my kids are out of the house. I'll be happy when I make a little more money, I get a raise. And they think that that's going to be the case, but it's not. And they've even shown people who won the lottery, maybe they're happy for a short time, but their base level of happiness, which is called your happiness set point, returns to the same level. And same thing with people, even when they become a paraplegic, I mean, terrible things happen. They are sad for a while, but then it goes back. So we all hover at one level, but science has shown you can raise your happiness set point. And that's really the good news, regardless if you're the most glass half empty person ever, you know?
Right. It's a habit, isn't it? It's a muscle.
It is. And people are born. There's definitely a genetic. I mean, the happiness set point, it's 50% genetic. So there is a genetic component. And then 10%, as they've done studies on this, only 10% is based on your circumstance. And that's what people think. Everything's based on your circumstance. But that's not happy. You're not happy because your circumstances are good. And then 40% is your habit. So that can easily be improved. And then the genetic part now, with epigenetics, they feel there's a lot you can do as well. So we have a lot of control. And I think what you said was very important, responsibility. That's such a good word, because a lot of time we don't take responsibility. And that's really the foundation. You know, are you living a life of being a victim or a victor? And so many people I find who live in victim mode really are unhappy. I mean, that's like the fastest way to unhappiness is, oh, poor me, because everything's happening to you, instead of saying, all right, what's the problem? Let me look at solutions and be a victor regardless of what's going on.
Oh, that's wonderful. What you said a few minutes ago about it's still a real engagement with joy, suffering, sorrow, sadness. It's still real engagement. It's that to me, I guess, because I get to experience this as well as try to teach it, I find that, again, there's an internal sense of peace and equanimity and love and connection, compassion, sort of in a flow state as it's all happening. I wanted to briefly mention that the author of The Soul of Money, who I believe has headed up the World Hunger Project for many, many years, I was advised to read her book by the head of the functional medicine business class, Dan Kalish, and her main premise of the book is that we come from a place of abundance, and she talks to people that have $25 in their bank account and they have a sense of abundance, and she talks to donors who have $5 million in their bank account and they come from an impoverished place. And to me, that's the same locus of control issue. Our abundance comes from in the, we start with the premise that we have enough.
I so agree with what you're saying, and I think that's so true. So that's a really good point.
I'll want you to share a bit about the epigenetics, because again, as a steward of the podcast, and I know you're a steward of your podcast, one of the reasons that I did it is I felt that a bunch of the our audience who want and need this information are catching up with some of the mind-blowing things that came out of the Human Genome Project. And so the way that came into focus for me was that once the human genome had been fully explicated, it turned out we have 95% the same genes as chimpanzees, which some people found kind of shocking. And then that 5% difference gives us this really spectacular brain, which everybody sort of intuits that that senses us apart, but we're these epigenetic superheroes in our capacity to turn genes off and on. And then given that the premise of functional medicine is that we are the result of our genes bathed by our environment, our food, and our perceptions, and our attitudes and practices, then people can say, oh my gosh, this is like a science fiction novel. I get to turn my genes off and on. Wow.
Such a good point, because it's not, you know, a lot of times, oh yeah, of course I'll have diabetes. My mother, my dad had it. But yes, it's really amazing that we have that ability. And same thing with the happiness, you know, so many of the things that are you're destined to doesn't have to be. So
yeah.
It's we have a lot of power. And that, and the other thing is, during this whole pandemic, during everything that's been going on, I've been getting so many remarks like thanking me, because the skills and the habits and the muscle that people have built up, it's let them have more resilience. So it's not that it's not that anything is less that's happening. There's a lot of, but they're able to ride through it. It's not tossing them over. And I think that's what we want to develop, because life isn't easy. Life isn't. And there's always ups and downs, and that we can't change that.
Right.
But we can change ourselves so that we are resilient, and that we can, you know, we can ride the waves instead of being, you know, blown over by them. So
I love it too, that those individuals you're describing are having a win-win or a win-win-win. So they're protecting their bones, and they're increasing their immune resilience to COVID-19, and they're feeling more capable, and they're more at ease with their family, which puts their family at ease. So they're more secure as a breadwinner. These are win-win-win situations that emerge from these approaches. And a lot of medicine, unfortunately, feels like this or that. Take the medication, but then deal with the side effects, or have to have the liver monitoring or whatever. And so it's so nice for people to feel this and I can be whole. I think it also is a testament to our native vitality. It's much greater than a lot of us realize. We're built to be very, very vital.
I think that's so true. Such a good point. And what to me is so interesting is that so many things are so simple, but have such profound effects. Sometimes it's the easiest thing that can have the biggest effect. That's what I find. I'm sure you must see that as well in functional medicine. But it could be chewing, it could be breathing, it could be so many really easy things can make such a huge difference that it's great.
Mm-hmm. I did want to, because what you're saying is so inspiring to me, and I feel that I'm a beneficiary of it on a day-to-day basis, I wanted to share that my wife and I just celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary yesterday. So that's something I'm very grateful for.
Congratulations. That's great.
And we were going to be at my family cabin in Montana, and people that have known us for a long time were going to gather. And instead, we're here in Alaska. And so I experienced this sort of grief, a sort of gap between what I had been anticipating. And so then I talked to a bunch of the people that care about us so that they knew about our anniversary and what have you. And then I found that even the experience of grief then was what my friend John in Montana, he called it radical acceptance of what is. And just this engagement in the now with what is. And so I found during the dinner the night before, it was me and my nuclear family at a local restaurant. So the five of us, and the restaurant was keeping us safe and we were keeping them safe. And I found this happiness principle happening in real time of linger longer. And so I was just taking these breaths and seeing the light in the eyes of the people that are in my household and their sense of ease and joy and connection. And it just seemed to me like that's such a great blessing then to feel like, yeah, there was a part of me that wanted that big gathering at the cabin, and I've done enough mindfulness over time that I would never knowingly fail to attend to the sacredness of the now. they're both there.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful, that you just said that so nicely, because, And I've seen this now, and it's interesting because I've had classes and I've done some stress reduction things during, I've done a lot of free programming and things to help people during this. And that's what people are saying, you know what, when there's nowhere to go, and we're still in, I live in New Jersey, so we still, restaurants aren't open. We're doing much better, but we're still it's still in a lot of shutdown mode. And people are spending more time with their family and they're just sort of hanging more. They're not running to work because they're working from home and they're living in the moment and they're being more present. And I think, just like you said, there's a lot of benefit to that. And I also, one of the principles I teach is look for the good, because we all have a little good in our day. And sometimes we're so busy and focusing on what's not going right that we don't realize all the wonderful things that already exist that are going right. So sometimes just shifting, like what you did, to what was nice here in that moment, being with your family, and it's just a little tweak, but it's huge in terms of how it makes you feel and just how you go through life. Because I mean, I'm sure you know people who, I mean, I'm sure people are listening too, and they wake up, all right, what's wrong? This is wrong, that's wrong, I have to deal with this today, versus what's right? Because, you know, we're sort of wired for negativity, so we can flip that, yeah.
I can sure relate to it personally that I, during, like so many functional medicine practitioners, it not only was essentially salvational for my patients, but it was for me as well. So we were all on the journey together. And I had this preconception that I didn't have a negativity bias. But as I became more and more positive over my functional medicine journey, I felt like I was walking higher and higher up this mountain ridge. And I was able to say, oh, well, a year ago or 5 years ago, I was a little lower on the mountain. I wasn't seeing quite as far. There was some mist shrouding things. And I was so struck by the I guess what I would call the potency of negativity. I learned about in sociology that one negative comment or thought equals 20 positive comments. But this focus on what's wrong is it would be easy to get a little overblown about this, but it's sort of a spiritual or psychic poison. And again, then I think our physiology needs the positive focus of our abundance and what to be grateful for as sort of the food for our well-being. And so I felt that the negativity bias I had was I was kind of living on spiritual junk food and not putting enough good stuff in the system. And I feel the benefits of shifting that.
It's such a great metaphor, the mountain. That's right. I really like how you phrase that with the mountain. But the truth is, we all have a negativity bias, or most people, because way back in the caveman days, we had to be concerned. Was there a tiger lurking? That was much more important than if someone gave us a compliment. So that's where we start. So that's why, I mean, I think most people, if you can get 20 compliments and you get one person saying something negative, what sticks to you? The negativity. But they found that like the happiest people have it backward. You have it the opposite way. And you can learn, you can train yourself to focus on what's right. And it does start taking you up the mountain. Exactly. That was I thought that was a great way to put it. But it's really true, because so often it's just so easy to focus on the negative. When you know you're doing that, and one of the things I always tell people is, like, when you get the, and I do believe that you have to deal with it. So you can't just push it down. When you have negative thoughts, it's not like you can just forget about them. And there are techniques to really deal with the issues and so that you can deal with them so that they aren't haunting you. But in general, you know, I tell people, all right, when they get the negative thought, because sometimes you get it and then it absorbs you. You're completely, you know, you're just engulfed in negativity. So number one, just when you get that, stop for a minute. And I mean, there's a lot of techniques, but then think of five true positive things. You know, so for every one negative, you can counter it with, all right, but what's true and positive? That's just an easy thing to do, because it does, as you said, it takes way more positive to counteract the negative.
Yeah. When if my wife and I find that things are feeling unduly heavy, then we've gotten into a fairly consistent habit of just, we'll just go back and forth with three things that we're grateful for. And I found it a little bit corny initially. And this was coming from me, like, hey, let's do this. At the same time, I had to get over this, again, maybe the stoicism or something, or, you know, Y chromosome poisoning, I don't know, something. So I found, though, that what was so helpful to me is that the sentiments themselves are incredibly genuine. I'm so grateful to have wonderful children who are enriching. I'm grateful that my socks are warm and dry when they come out of the dryer. I'm grateful to have a roof over my head. I'm grateful for fresh air. So that really stood out to me, that the heaviness sort of goes away as the brain shifts into that state of positivity. It dampens that feeling of overwhelm or ickiness that goes with undue focus on the negative.
Yeah, that's so good. One of the best relationship things that I've used myself too is the appreciation game, where you can go back. So let's say, you know, you're just not, something's up, or you just got an argument, whatever it is, then you just go back and forth what you appreciate about the other person.
Yeah.
And it's very similar and it's so powerful. And afterwards, you know, you just feel very different. But even that's good for families, you know, just sit around the table, what you appreciate. Because how often do we do that? Are we grateful and appreciate and even tell other people that? Just such a powerful thing to do. So I love how you do doing that.
One of the other experts,
I don't think it's corny at all. Yeah.
No, I've grown to become very comfortable and glad that I get to do it. So I'm happy for, yeah, you know, for myself to get past that. I talked to one expert who expressed this, what I felt was very compassionate importance, that she described it. It's Heidi Hanna for Attribution. Oh, yeah. She said we're wired for safety, and you flagged it also. These reasons that we have heightened perceptions around threats have a very legitimate ancestral origin, that we need to know if there's a tiger there. We need to think about if there's a tiger there. If we walk a new city at night, we need to ask ourselves if it's wise to go down that street. And the related part that I flashed on when I heard you speak a moment ago was about mindfulness. So when these fears arise, I love that the experience of mindfulness is saying, oh, hello, fear thought, you have something important for me. And Thich Nhat Hanh, the Zen practitioner, I was told the other day by one of his devotees that he says to any and all things that arise, whether we think of them as icky or not, oh, hello, hello, my dear selfishness, I'm there for you. Oh, hello, my dear fear, I'm there for you. Oh, hello, my dear happiness, I'm there for you. He just attends to all of his experiences, his feelings, like these precious components of life.
That's great, because it's true. And then you see, where in the body do you feel that? So you can appreciate it, and then you can figure out what, you know, exactly, versus just squashing it or just not dealing with it. I like that.
Yeah. Well, so you have so much to share, and you've given us a big portion of your day. What are critical things we didn't get to that you want folks that hear this podcast to know or read the blog? Because there'll be a blog transcription as well.
So I think osteoporosis, make sure you're exercising, eating well. I think that's the key. Make sure you start some practice to reduce your stress as well as increase your happiness. You can just start with your mindset, you know, every day, you know, start with one thing, looking for the good, savoring the good when it happens. And when you get the negative thoughts, replace it, or at least think about five positive but true things that have happened. Start with that. I think that's really good. And I do have a free gift that you'll put in the show notes for people with.
Right.
It's a happiness. There's two parts to it. There's a journal. It's like a 7-day journal with happiness habits. So that can also help you. And there's a 7-minute morning meditation to just get you on a happiness meditation. So at least it starts getting you wired for more positivity before you start your day.
Right. Thank you so much. And I hope for anybody who is feeling overwhelmed now, or just the sense of connection, that they do that, and that they know also there's just a relief in taking action, just taking a step, a journal or a meditation. I think if we feel frozen, then when we get moving, we get a sense of ease. And again, we're built to move. We're dynamic creatures. So when we're moving in a direction, maybe it is a 50-mile journey, but 100 feet, half a mile, we're moving. I think that gives us a sense of peace and ease.
Yeah, and also just one, don't stress out. And, oh my gosh, I have to exercise. I have to eat well for my bones. One step at a time. Any step in the right direction is fine, because there's nothing worse, as you mentioned, than overwhelm. So you just take it slowly and you gradually build up. And that's what I found works. You know, slow progress is sustainable. And it's, and then you have the habits, and then you enjoy your life.
Super. Well, I just, again, can't thank you enough. It's been really a pleasure. And I'm so happy that this information now will go to the people that want and need it.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure for me too.
Seaworthy exists for people to overcome their health challenges and be fully vital. Please consider subscribing, giving us a 5-star review if we've earned it, and going to our website podcast tab for any questions or comments you'd like to share with us. Thanks.